You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of the last section of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Spirit of the Waldorf School, Lectures Surrounding the Founding of the First Waldorf School, Stuttgart, 1919. This, however, is an essay from the journal The Social Future from February 1920 in the same book. And the title of the essay is The Pedagogical Objective of the Waldorf School in Stuttgart. Anyone who prepares for the teaching profession at a modern school of education certainly takes good principles about the educational system and the art of teaching into life. Many to whom this task falls undoubtedly have the goodwill to actually use these principles. Nevertheless, there is a far-reaching feeling of discontent in this profession. New or apparently new objectives continually emerge. We create new institutions, which are supposed to meet the demands of human nature and social life in a better way than those which preceded them. It would be unfair not to acknowledge that for more than a century, the caretakers of pedagogy and didactics have been the noblest people, born by high idealism. Their legacy provides the new teacher with a rich treasure of pedagogical wisdom and inspiring practical advice. Unquestionably, the ideas that are available from leading educators, if they are adhered to, could remedy every shortcoming of education and teaching. The cause of such discontent cannot be the absence of a carefully cultivated pedagogy. It also cannot come from a lack of goodwill on the part of those who are active in education and teaching. This discontent is, however, not unfounded. The life experiences of every impartial person prove that. Those participating in the establishment of the Waldorf School in Stuttgart are filled with such feelings. Emil Molte, the founder of the school, and the author, who has been permitted to give direction in the method of teaching and instruction, and who will continue to provide guidance in this area, wish to solve a pedagogical and social problem with this school. In attempting to solve the pedagogical problem, it is important to recognize why the good principles of education that are so widely available do not lead to satisfying results. For example, people generally acknowledge that we must observe the child's developing personality to derive the basic ideas of teaching and education. In all kinds of ways, people assert that this point of view is correct. Today, however, difficult obstacles must be overcome in taking this point of view. We need a spiritual understanding that really unlocks the nature of humanity to make a true practice effective. The point of view that dominates modern thinking does not lead to such understanding. This point of view believes that it has a firm footing only if it can set up universally valid laws, laws that can be expressed as concrete ideas, and then apply to specific cases. If people have received their training in a modern institution of education, they are accustomed to search for such laws. Even people predestined to become educators are accustomed to thinking in these terms. However, the essence of the human soul escapes comprehension if we try to understand it through such laws. Only nature yields up these laws. If we want to comprehend the essence of the soul, we must suffuse our mechanical understanding with artistic creativity. To comprehend the spiritual, the observer must become an artistic viewer. Now, you could claim that such an understanding is not true understanding, since it involves personal experience in the comprehension of things. There may be many logical preconceptions that support such a claim. But what speaks against it is that without the inclusion of personal inner experiences, of creative comprehension, we cannot recognize the spiritual. People shy away from the inclusion of personal experience because they believe that they must thereby step into the trap of arbitrary personal judgment. It is certainly possible to become arbitrary if we do not achieve inner objectivity through careful self-development. Thus, the path is indicated for those who accept the validity of spiritual knowledge alongside the conventional knowledge of the field. The task of unlocking the essence of the soul falls to spiritual knowledge, and spiritual knowledge must be the foundation of a real art of education and instruction. An understanding of spiritual knowledge leads to an understanding of human nature that is so vibrant, that has such living ideas, that the teacher can shape them to meet the individual needs of the children. The demand to teach and educate according to the needs of the children has a practical meaning only for those teachers who can do this. In our time, with its intellectualism and its love for abstractions, some people might attempt to refute this. Some might, for instance, object that it is quite obvious that we should interpret general ideas concerning human nature, including those concerned with modern society, for specific cases. To guide educationally each individual child by interpreting general ideas, we must acquire through a particular spiritual knowledge an eye, EYE, for what cannot be included as a specific case under a general rule. For that rule first must be understood through the specific case. Unlike the model of normal cognition, the spiritual knowledge meant here does not lead to a set of general ideas and to their utilization in specific cases. Rather, it brings people to a certain condition of the soul, so that they may, through observation, experience the particular case in its individuality. This spiritual science pursues the question of how humans develop in childhood and youth. It shows how the natural tendency of the child, during the period from birth until the change of teeth, is to develop out of a compulsion to copy. What the child sees, hears, etc., evokes a compulsion to do the same. Spiritual science explores in detail how this compulsion unfolds. For such investigations, we need methods that guide simple mechanical thinking into artistic observation at every opportunity. Only in this way can we examine what excites children to imitate and how they imitate. At the time of the change of teeth, the child's experiencing undergoes a complete reversal. The desire arises to do or think what another person, perceived by the child as an authority, does or thinks, if that person indicates that the deed or thought is right. Before this stage of life, imitation makes the child's own being a copy of the environment. With the entrance into this stage of life, the child does not merely imitate, but absorbs another being into itself with a certain degree of consciousness. However, until about 9 years of age, the compulsion to imitate continues alongside the new desire to follow authority. If we begin with how these two main compulsions are expressed in these two successive stages of childhood, further aspects of the child's nature will reveal themselves. We get to know the living, pliant development of childhood. what is really significant escapes those in the field of education who make their observations in the way that is right, for observing both natural things and humans as creatures of nature. However, those who use a method of observation appropriate to the field of education sharpen the ability to see the specifics of a child's essence. For such people, a child is not a specific case judged according to general rules, but a single question needing an answer. Now, people will object that it would not be possible in a class with many children to concentrate on each child with such depth. Without wanting to suggest that classes should be overcrowded, we must say that a teacher who possesses the kind of spiritual cognition meant here can more easily manage a large class than another teacher who does not have this cognition. This spiritual understanding reveals itself in the entire demeanor of the teacher. It will give character to each word, to everything done by the teacher. Under the guidance of the teacher, the children will become inwardly active. The teacher's general conduct will affect the children in such a way that they do not need to be forced into activity. The appropriate curriculum and teaching methods come from knowledge of the child's development. If we understand how the desire to imitate and the need to be directed out of authority work together in the child during the first years of elementary school, we will know, for instance, how to teach writing. If we base our methods on a purely intellectual understanding, we will work against the strengths present in the child's desire to imitate. However, if we begin with drawing and gradually guide the child to writing, we will develop what strives toward development. In this way, the curriculum can come entirely from the way the child develops. Only a curriculum derived in this way works in the direction of human development. It makes people strong. All others weaken people, and this weakening affects their whole lives. Only through the kind of spiritual understanding described here can an educational principle, like the necessity of respecting the child's individuality, be used. A pedagogy that wants to come into practice, a pedagogy that wants to put into practice what many support as a theoretically good principle, must be based upon a true spiritual science. Otherwise, only those few teachers who, through fortunate circumstances, have the natural ability to form instinctively their own teaching methods can use it. The pedagogical and didactic teaching of the Waldorf School should receive its impulse from a true spiritual, scientific understanding of people. I set myself the task of motivating the teachers in this direction in a seminar on spiritual, scientific pedagogy and didactics that I held for them before the school opened. This school is a first attempt at solving these briefly outlined pedagogical tasks. At the same time, Emil Molt has created an organization in the Waldorf School that corresponds to a current social demand. The school is the elementary school for the children of the Waldorf Astoria factory employees. Children from the different social classes sit next to each other, thus fully preserving the character of a unified elementary school. That is all that one person can do at first. In a broader sense, the school can solve an important future social problem only if society integrates the schools in such a way that the spirit of the Waldorf School can permeate them as far as possible under present conditions. The above description shows that we must build all pedagogical art on a knowledge of the soul that is closely tied to the personality of the teacher. This personality must be able to freely express itself in pedagogical creativity. That, however, is possible only if the entire administration of the school system is autonomous. If practicing teachers need to deal only with other practicing teachers in administrative questions. An educator not actively teaching would be just as much out of place in the school administration as a person without artistic creativity would be in giving directions to creative artists. The nature of the pedagogical art requires that the faculty divide its time between teaching and administering the school. The spirit formed out of the attitude of all teachers, united in an educating community, thus comes to full effect in the administration. In this community, only what comes from a recognition, an understanding of the soul will have value. Such a community is possible only in the threefold social organism, which has a free cultural life alongside a democratically oriented state and an independent economic life. Parenthesis, refer to the articles in the preceding numbers of Soziale Zukunft, the social future, for information concerning the nature of the threefold social organism. Close parenthesis, footnote, translator's note. Dr. Steiner is referring to the monthly journal, that is, not the lecture cycle, published in English under the same title. Some of the articles referenced here can be found in German in GA, and then there's a German title, partially available in English as titled The Renewal of the Social Organism, Anthroposophic Press, 1985, which, readers aside, which is also on this website. End of readers aside, end of footnote. A cultural life that receives its directives from the political bureaucracy or from the forces of economic life cannot take care of a school whose impulse derives solely from the faculty. However, a free school will prepare people for life, people who can work to their full capacity in politics and industry because these capacities were fully developed. Those people who do not share the opinion that the impersonal means of production or similar things shape people, but instead recognize from factual reality how people create society, will recognize the importance of a school not based on party or other such standpoints. They will recognize the importance of a school based upon what the depths of cosmic existence convey to the human community through the new generation entering the community. To recognize and develop this, however, is only possible from a spiritual point of view, as this article has tried to describe. From this point of view, the profound importance of a pedagogical practice founded upon spiritual science is apparent. Educators will have to judge much in this pedagogical practice in a way different from that of the present. To mention only one thing, we should note that alongside ordinary gymnastics in the Waldorf school, we established a kind of eurythmy as equally important. This eurythmy is a visible language. It provides exercise to the human limbs. People and groups of people move in a way that expresses a soul content, much in the same way as in speaking or music. People are inspired in their movements. Even though today gymnastics, which can work directly only on strengthening the body, and at best can work indirectly on strengthening moral character, is prejudicially overvalued, a later time will recognize how the inspirational movement art of eurythmy develops the initiative to will, while at the same time strengthening the body. It encompasses people as a whole, in body, soul, and spirit. Those people who do not allow the current crisis of European civilization to pass by in a kind of soul sleep, but fully experience it, will see that it did not originate in institutions that simply missed their goals and that simply need improvement. Those people will look for the cause deep in human thinking, feeling, and willing. They will also acknowledge that the education of the coming generation is one of the ways leading to a revitalization of our social life. They will not leave unnoticed an attempt which seeks a revitalization in pedagogical art, and through which good principles and goodwill can come to life. The Waldorf School is not an alternative school like so many others, founded in the belief that they will correct all the errors of one kind or another in education. It is founded on the idea that the best principles and the best will in this field can come into effect only if the teacher understands human nature. However, this understanding is not possible without developing an active interest in all of human social life. The heart, thus opened to human nature, accepts all human sorrow and all human joy as its own experience. Through a teacher who understands the soul, who understands people, the totality of social life affects the new generation struggling into life. People will emerge from this school fully prepared for life. And that is the end of the essay. We'll call it Section 7 of the book, The Spirit of the Waldorf School, Lectures Surrounding the Founding of the First Waldorf School in Stuttgart, 1919.